Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Caps Canadians game one tonight down at Capital One Arena. A busy sports week on the sports calendar, always, with the NBA and NHL playoffs going on. And then the NFL draft at the end of the week, Thursday night. We'll have all-day coverage, all-night coverage right here on the Team 980. And the Caps don't play Thursday night, right, Grant? It's a Monday, Wednesday, Friday schedule, so no conflict with the first round of the NFL draft. We'll talk some draft, but as all of you know, Grant hosts with Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan, 2 to 6.30 every day. You can follow Grant on X on Twitter, at Grant Paulson. Is there pressure on this team to go deep into this postseason after 7 years of nothing following the Cup?
Kevin, I think there's immense pressure on this team to get out of the first round, because not only have they not gone deep, they have not gotten out of round one since the 2018 Stanley right. Cup. And there are reasons for that that are explanations as much as excuses. They've had some pretty serious injuries. They were in a great spot in a series against Carolina the following year, and T.J. Oshie on a pretty ugly hit by Warren Fogle was lost, and it changed the series. They had the COVID year where, you know, it's kind of a crapshoot and you're playing in a neutral site. It didn't matter as much. But here's the thing. It doesn't matter when you look at a seven-year sample and you go, you've been one of the better teams in hockey. They've made the playoffs 10 out of 11 years, and you got really nothing to show for it other than the Cup run in terms of getting to even an Eastern Conference final. So I think if they got to round two with all their injuries, played a competitive series, you could probably project ahead and say they're in a really good spot moving forward. But if they were to get bounced in a 1-8 matchup in round one by Montreal, it would be a really bad look.
Why do odds makers not give them much of a chance? They're the third or fourth odds choice in the Eastern Conference, like the seventh or eighth overall to win the Cup when they had the second best record in hockey.
So it's a good question. The easy answer would be they played terribly down the stretch, and they, as they were kind of hunting Ovi's record and the win losses, didn't go the way they wanted in the last 2 weeks. Didn't look like a playoff team necessarily. They kind of took their foot off the gas pedal. But I don't think that's true, because you monitor those odds like I do.
Yeah, it's been that way for a while.
Exactly. When they were the best team in the East, yeah. When they were running away and hiding with the Metro, the one seed in the East, and competing for the President's Trophy as the number one team in the National Hockey League, they were still there. So it's a great question. I think recency effect in the postseason is a factor. There's a little bit of, you know, show me. I think that they're demanding of the Capitals. The market's established for a reason. I think the narrative nationally is that they are a bit of a regular season tiger, right? And they've got to prove themselves in the playoffs. But the last thing I'll say is, and again, this is maybe not reflective of the odds changing, but I think if they were fully healthy, it would look different. They're without their top goaltender in game one, very likely Logan Thompson. They're going to be without a top line forward, and this is their biggest loss to me by far, Alexi Protas, who was their best player at even strength, until late in this series at the earliest. He might play if it goes six or seven, but he probably won't be around until round two. And then the news I'm hearing on Marty Ferravari, a top four defenseman, is actually bad. I mean, it does not sound like he's playing in this series. Nobody's said that definitively, but it could be a while before we see him, even if they go on a run, if we see him again. So they're not healthy. And for a team that was healthy all year, that's a bummer. But I do think that gets reflected in the odds a little bit.
Isn't some of it just that some of the teams in the East, like Tampa and Florida and Carolina and Toronto, are really good?
Sure, absolutely. They are very good. I mean, the Caps were better this year. And maybe you could make the case again that those teams played a better brand of hockey going into the playoffs. But when Washington was rolling, the odds still didn't reflect that. So, yeah, I think, you know, it's odd because for so many years you could say, Kevin, with a Capitals style of play when they were young and fast and getting up and down the ice, they didn't score a lot of dirty goals. Maybe they weren't elite defensively. You could say they didn't really play the playoff brand of hockey. For basketball fans, it was like the Phoenix Suns back in the day that would win 60 games.
Yeah.
But then you get them in these half-court situations, just like Houston right now. You know, you need the Rockets to play these games down the stretch and 2 minutes left, and they got to go get buckets in half-court. It's a tough ask. But the Caps this year do those things. I actually think they're built, if healthy, well for the playoffs. They get the dirty goals. They get a lot of traffic. They are big and physical and heavy. They are faster than they've been. And they were top five scoring goals and allowing goals. They've been excellent defensively up until the final couple of weeks as well.
Logan Thompson was the first off the ice with in this morning's skate around. So you think that that means he probably doesn't go in game one? And if that's true, what's the difference between him and Lindgren?
So typically that would mean that he would be the guy. And it is very possible. Like, I would not be shocked if he played. But Lindgren has been the starter down the stretch while Thompson was hurt. He has not played in a game in weeks. He is healthy and close to 100%, it sounds like, based on what people that were at practice saw and told me this weekend. But the plan, as it was kind of passed along to me in a game of telephone here recently, was more likely that Lindgren would get the assignment in game one. They'd kind of see how that went, and then Thompson would be available into game two. Now, if he's just 100%, he's their best goalie, and he should start. And maybe that is going to be the case. Again, I wouldn't be shocked. I've just leaned Lindgren because he had one very good start to end the season. They finally got him where they wanted him to be going into the playoffs. The difference to answer that question, Kevin, is Thompson's much more trustworthy. You know, they stockpile their wins with him in net. When he was at his best this season, you know, going back to the winter, he was the second-best goaltender in hockey outside of Connor Hellebuck, who was going to win the Vezina Award as the best at the position. And Thompson has been a part of a team that made a cup run in Vegas. I mean, this is an outstanding postseason caliber netminder. Lindgren's a fan favorite. He's great in the room. He had an outstanding year last year. And, you know, he carried them to the playoffs as a nearly minus 40 goal differential team as the eighth seed when he got hot. But he has not played at that level this year. And I would say there's a sizable difference between the two. I don't know that all the reporters that cover the team would agree, but my opinion is Thompson at his best is considerably better than Lindgren. He's rebound control, just more confident. And in the cage, I think, gives them a much better chance to go on a run. I think you could win a series with Lindgren. I think you could go many rounds with Logan Thompson.
Talking to my guy, Grant Paulson, from, of course, 106.7 The Fan. So what are you confident in entering this series, and what concerns you? The injuries, like, are the biggest concern.
Yeah, you know, everyone's been talking about how they're playing, and I could be wrong. You know, this is hockey's so quirky and weird. It's about puck luck and bounces, and I just view it different than other sports. I don't necessarily believe in momentum mattering or not. Edmonton got waxed 7-0 in one of their final games of the season last year and then went on a cup run. I worry more about the injuries, and I think people are so busy talking about how they played that they're not talking about when you don't have your best even-strength player on the top line, it's a big deal. You know, when you don't have a top four defenseman, Marty Ferravari, and I just don't know that people realize how hurt he is at this point, because that's like the third injury people talk about. It happened at the very end of the season. It's a big deal. And so those injuries are number one. I would say if we're just moving past that, like, you got to line up and play hockey. My biggest concern would be the top line for Montreal, Cole Caulfield and Nick Suzuki, their leading point getter and their top offensive players. I think you can make the case that was one of the best lines in the National Hockey League over the last 3 or 4 weeks. They can skate around. They can put up points and goals. I think they're going to get their chances, especially with the Caps being a little bit banged up on the back end defensively with that third pair. What I feel great about is two of the four lines for Washington that haven't been touched injury-wise. Their second line, that's Pierre-Luc Dubois, Tom Wilson, and Connor McMichael, which was the strength of their team in the first half of the season, back together now. I think those guys will be excellent, and I hope they put that PLD line, which is their best defensive line. He's one of the better two-way players in hockey, you know, on that Suzuki-Caulfield line that I just mentioned. And I feel really good about their fourth line having a big series. That's the Nick Doubt-centered line with Brandon Duhaime on the back end. They're moving Taylor Radish back down. I think you got to get production out of Anthony Beauvillier, who's going to be on the top line with Alex Ovechkin and Dylan Strome. He's filling in for Protas. And that third line, Kev, so that's Ryan Leonard, the rookie you've heard so much about from Boston College, yeah, centered by Lars Eller, who helped win them a cup years ago, has left and come back, but just really hasn't played at a high level. I'd say he's one of their weakest links this year. That line with Andrew Mangiapane, who makes $5.5 million, was okay, but probably didn't live up to the money. One of the few off-season additions that wasn't an A+, it was probably more like a B- or a C. That's going to be maybe the story of the series. Can they get anything out of Leonard, Eller, and Mangiapane? But I feel great about what they call lines 2 and 4, and I think it's their best two most consistent lines.
All right, one quick question about Montreal beyond what you've said. What about their goaltender, Mont Tremblant? That's not his name, but that's the beautiful place in Montreal. I can't say his last name. But people have said, in doing some very light reading on it, that this guy is capable of carrying them. Is that true?
Yes, he is. I mean, Samuel Montembeau. He is, I would say, at his best, scary. Like, he's a guy that we could be punching walls saying, man, he's stealing games. But here's the problem. So I think he finished like 23rd in save percentage, Kev, or something like that in the National Hockey League. They gave up top five shots allowed. They are leaky defensively. This is not a good defensive team. So if the Caps do win the series, I think it's going to be them scoring 4 and 5 goals at a time. The goalie isn't necessarily the problem as much as their defensive end of the ice, where they give up a ton of shots. They should be able to get a lot of pucks on the net.
You like them easily or not? Long series, short series?
I like them. I would take them in 5 if they were healthy. I think it's probably going to be 6, maybe even 7, just because they're so banged up.
And then who in the East do you think they can't beat? Is there anybody that they can't beat?
I don't like them matching up with Florida. And in the second round, they'll probably get Carolina, unless the Devils, yeah, come back to win that series. I think they could beat Carolina, but I think it could be a bad matchup if they have to go 7 and deal with Montreal and they take a chunk of skin out with a bite or two as they go.
All right, we'll shift gears here because we do have the draft coming up at the end of the week. What do you hope they do? You and Danny, I'm sure, have talked about, you know, possibilities at 29, what you'd like to see, what you wouldn't like to see. Give me both of those. What do you hope falls to them at 29 and they execute on, and what do you hope they steer clear of?
Yeah, so I would trade back as best I could. Now, it's easy to say that. I think a lot of teams, yeah, in the back end of the first round want to do that, and it's easier said than done. But I think more than maybe I've ever wanted them to in the past, based on the lack of quantity of picks and where they're at on the board, I think trading back would actually make more sense this year than I can remember. But let's just say hypothetically they can't. You know, I think you got to pick an edge if one falls. Now, I don't know what you're hearing or what guests are telling you, but I was a big fan of like Donovan Esaraku from Boston College, Mike Green. These two guys are probably both gone, it looks like. I mean, it sounds like there could be 5 or 6 edges that go in the top 25, 27 picks. So as much as I've been desperate for them to get a pass rusher, and I've screamed into a megaphone for a month, that's what I want them to do, you can't reach. Like, I wouldn't take James Pierce probably at 29. So if Esaraku or Green is there, which I think is increasingly less likely, I would be giddy to take one of those players. Otherwise, if you can't trade back, I think I go corner, because there's going to be some value there. It feels like how the board's supposedly going to go according to all the mock drafts. And I'll never be upset with a weapon, Kev. I want a running back who can hit a home run, a wide receiver who could take the first down and make it a touchdown. You know, it took them almost half the season last year to get a touchdown from a receiver who, like, caught a ball in the grass and went into the paint with it. They need playmakers, so I'm never going to be upset doing that.
Yeah, I think Green doesn't make it anywhere near Washington, and if he does, then the red flags on him are, you know, worth paying attention to. And Ezeraku, there's a chance, but you might be right. His pass rushing ability might mean he's beyond that, or he goes before 29 overall. By the way, I was sitting here looking at your Twitter, because you wrote something over the weekend, changing subjects again, about the Nats. I didn't know this. You were watching the game. I wasn't. But this is the second time I think this has happened, and I'm curious as to why you think it's happened. But you tweeted out, if James Wood isn't hurt and Davey pulled him in the seventh with this bullpen in a game in Colorado, that's just bad. Sorry, save the there's a doubleheader tomorrow response. Don't care. Stop pulling your best player. He did this in the Dodger game when they had a lead,
yep.
But it was the Dodgers and the heart of the order was coming up, and they pulled yep. him for defensive purposes, and he was due up second in the bottom of the ninth. I actually asked, I think I asked Zuckerman and I think I asked Tommy, isn't that a big deal? Why would he do that? He's their biggest threat. And they said, well, defensively, they had a lead. So you feel the same way, that it doesn't make any sense to pull him. Well, spell out the game situation in that moment when he pulled him.
Yeah, Kevin, it's egregious. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how someone could argue opposite, because it's not like they're putting Andrew Jones in defensively. They're putting in Alex Cole.
You can tell me
he's a little bit better than James Wood, maybe. Like on a 20-80, maybe he's a 50, 55. Wood's a 45, 50, whatever. But it's not that different. And you referenced the Dodgers game. The problem that was so annoying about that was, as you said, he was due up second, and I think it was a one. At most, it was a two-run game.
It was a two-run game. It was 6-4.
Yeah, with the worst bullpen in the sport, and the Dodgers, as you said, heart of the order coming up. So if you would have gotten back to the point where you need Wood to hit now bottom nine and it's a call, that's malpractice. But in this specific situation over the weekend, it was the seventh inning, and yes, they were up huge. So you could say, well, it was 12-2. If anybody's ever seen a game at Coors Field, there's more six-run innings in that ballpark than there is anywhere in the sport. And with this bullpen, if you want to do that maybe in the eighth or the ninth, I suppose I get it. But I don't like it, period. Again, you're not upgrading substantially defensively. James Wood's being treated as if he's some liability in left.
That's my question to you. How bad is he defensively?
When he got called up last year in left field, which he had barely played, he was bad. He was not reading things well. It looked bad. And if you wanted to pull him out of games then, I guess you could have. He has made major adjustments. This was a guy that played center field in the minor leagues. He is a great athlete. He should ultimately be an above-average defender. I don't think he is one yet. But again, if I'm saying, like, at best, if you want to say he's a 5.5 out of 10, Alex Cole's not better than a 6. By the way, Cole came in, misplayed a ball with the bases loaded, and 3 runs scored because it got all the way to the wall. But there's a larger point, too, where if I were to concede that, let's say, he's a bad defender, which I don't agree with, what teams pull their best players regularly? Who does that? I mean, just from a relationship-building standpoint, just from a young star, they're giving the kids bobblehead away on Tuesday and Wednesday, the face of the whole damn thing. What team is pulling their best player a few times a week defensively? It doesn't happen. And he is not an albatross. That's my frustration. It's not like he's standing out there with a pot or a pan on his hand. I just don't get it.
Yeah, that Dodgers game, I remember thinking, that doesn't make any sense with the heart of the order coming up and him. It's the Dodgers. Your bullpen sucks. You almost have to assume that it's going to be tied or you're going to be behind in the ninth inning. Now, if it was 12-2, you said it in the moment. It looks like you tweeted it out in the moment. I would not have thought of that at 12-2, even in Coors Field. But still,
well,
he
only
had
because it was the seventh inning, right? Like that's you're talking about essentially the middle of the ball game. Like
yeah,
had he done it in the ninth, I would not have even been bothered. Certainly not tweeted. But it's the third time this season he's done it. So to me, there's this philosophy as if they need to get him out of the game defensively. And everyone's like, well, they have a doubleheader tomorrow. A, he's 22. B, they were off on Friday. C, they're going to be off on Monday. Like, this is not about rest. He's fine. They clearly think that they need to play Alex Cole. Why don't they do that with C.J. Abrams at shortstop? With Nelson Nunez, who's an elite defender. Why don't they do that? They haven't done it once with Ahmed Rosario at third base. I don't understand it.
Yeah. By the way, and looking at the box score, when they took him out, he was 3 for 5 with 4 RBIs and a 3-run homer. And in that game, how about Dylan Cruz? Good for him. 2 homers in that game and that 12-11 win on Saturday.
Man, did he need it. He's been struggling. Yeah. He didn't have an extra base hit, Kev, until that game. And then he hit 2 homers, and those were not like cheapy Colorado homers. Opposite field, right center. And he hit a double as well. He's got a 6-game hitting streak, so he's finally getting it going.
All right, you guys are where today? City Tap House, Penn Quarter. You and Danny doing the show there, right?
Yeah, we're fired up. We're actually going to be giving away Caps tickets on site for people coming through for later in the series. But, yeah, it's 2 blocks from the arena.
Yep.
So if anybody's going down to the game, they got great Caps specials, and people will be rocking their red. All the bartenders wear Caps sweaters, so it's going to be a good atmosphere.
901 9th Street Northwest, literally a block and a half, 2 blocks from the arena. Go down and see Grant and Danny. Thanks for doing this. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, my pleasure, Kev. Be good, man.
Yep. Grant Paulson, everybody. When we come back, Sam Monson from the 33rd team. We'll talk NFL draft with Sam. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the team980.com.